You're listening to the Southwest Tech Daily Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Southwest Tech Daily Podcast. I'm Robert Hillier and my co-host is Fayaz Akhan.
Today we're talking about how to solve the Southwest skills shortage.
There is a huge shortage in the future jobs that we need, a lot of which are tech jobs. And we're not talking about a few thousand, we're talking about tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of jobs.
It's Richard Ellis from Microsoft on how to increase digital skills to boost Southwest businesses over the next few years. That's coming up.
We're also talking to Steve Cox from the incubator Launchpad at Falmouth University, where they held a Tech Stars event, which had seven teams creating different businesses over one weekend.
Tech Stars is a great starter to identify profile of people and their character, how they you see them under the worst pressure, you see them without the time to do stuff, but they still have to get through the process quickly.
And we hear from Roger Osorio, author, founder and Tech Stars facilitator, all the way from New Jersey, who had ideas on how to raise aspirations within the Southwest.
But we need visionary leaders who have that kind of timeline, who can see the world 20, 30, 40, 50 years down the road, and then they could say, you know what, I want to plant some seeds now that are going to make a difference then.
Let's hear first from Richard Ellis from Microsoft, who explained the purpose of their digital skills events held all over the country. This one was held at Exeter, at the Met Office.
We want to make sure we are working as far and wide as we can across the country, but also by region, to make sure our skills programs can really reach people who need them.
So I'm presuming you're working with a lot of businesses to be able to do that, and I wonder how open they are to the suggestions that they should create new skills and within their organizations to promote jobs for the future.
So today, if I think about who's here in the audience and the group today, there's the whole spectrum from the Met Office's hosts through to we have representatives from all of the local government authorities who are here. We have educators, both primary, secondary, tertiary education. We also have private businesses here and enterprises. And your question around how are the businesses receiving it, I think they know that they need to do something. It also can't always be just buying in skills that they may need for a project. And home growing skills has to be part of the answer here, not just because it's good business, but it's also the right thing to do for the area. And we were talking earlier about there are a few mega trends that are colliding here when it comes to the Southwest. We have a very diverse and dispersed economy that covers a massive coastline, inner city areas, rural areas, and everything in between. We're quite spread out. But we tend to be very purpose-driven, I think, in the Southwest. I think our connection to the land and the sea is very strong. We have the sustainability agenda coming to the fore. And we also have a very big creative sector as well. And I think they're all great ingredients for what also needs to drive our tech community even further than it is today. Mm-hmm. So from my perspective, I think businesses do want to be doing more and see the need. And I got the classic question came upstairs earlier about sponsoring skills, and the question was something like, I've been here before, I've tried to hire a data scientist or train someone up to be a data scientist, skill them up, bring them into the business, and then they left and went to London for more money. And I know that's a standard question, and it's happened, people listen to this, it might have happened to you, and it's painful. I guess I turn it slightly on its head that I don't think we're going to solve the differences in London wages compared to wages paid in Plymouth overnight. We're just not going to solve that. But the problem is one of velocity and volume of skills coming into the marketplace. And actually, if that individual does graduate and goes for a job in London or, let's dream, San Francisco or New York or somewhere, that's a good news story for the Southwest. We are exporting talent into the global marketplace that was born and raised in the Southwest, will tell their story about the Southwest and inspire other people in the Southwest that what's possible. Now, we'd all hope more would stay. We want to build the economy up with people who want to stay, but I don't think we shouldn't also not do this because we're afraid we're training them for someone else. I think we have to be bolder than that and say, we're going to train people up. And some will leave, for sure. There's going to be migration away from the peninsula, but there's also a chance to grow people who will stick and stay and will form new businesses or support existing businesses.
I mean, that's a very positive way of looking at it, and I think that's really great. And I notice as well that within the Southwest, and I don't know if you feel the same thing, but people tend to go away and then they always come back. There's a boomerang effect. People from, certainly Devon and Cornwall, I've noticed, yeah. People from Devon and Cornwall go away and then they always come back. So it's not too bad if they leave for a bit. I don't think it's the end of the world. But then, what are the actual practicalities of increasing digital skills here? How does it actually work?
So on your point on the boomerang, I live in Bristol, so I count myself fully as part of the Southwest, but I'm married to a Devonian who I think would like to come further south. But I think you're right on boomerang. But people will come back, and you have to build these pathways for people. There will always be migration inwards and outwards from any region. To your point on how do we start and how does this all work? For me, it's about democratization. Fancy word for making it accessible for everybody. Like, we have to stop the mindset where people think they have to be a math genius to code, or they have to be in the top set in their sciences at school to have any chance in this career, whether they're 14, 16, or 46. We have to really show people that actually there are multiple entry paths into the tech industry. There are different levels they can work at. There are different platforms they can work on. For instance, we are working with, if you take the Microsoft Power Platform, that's a low-code, no-code platform. And we often talk about citizen developers. So people with an idea to solve a challenge, how they can begin to write an application in Power Platform without deep technical skills. Mm. That could be all they ever do with tech. But that also might be the start of their journey where they become curious to think, what else can I achieve? So I think we have to democratize first. That's job number one.
Mm. Actually, there's also things like user experience designers. So quite a lot of times, one of my jobs or contracts would be helping design an app, but without any technical skills whatsoever. And you just make sure that the user experience is ideal. It's actually, you do need also deep analytical skills. But I think what happens as well is when we say to people, there's a lot of non-tech jobs in tech, then we end up with a lot of non-tech people in tech. And then what do we do about people who need actual technical skills?
Whether it's tech or non-tech, but working within technology. So you described that. If you think about business problems and creating businesses and how they start, it's often creative. People are creatively solving a problem that exists, and they're using that to make a business and to make money. And that could be a tech-led business. And now, if we think about businesses that are created today, I would argue that most will be digitally led. That could be a pop-up restaurant on a bar who don't ever have a menu. They've got a QR code. They don't have traditional serving staff. They have that QR code, goes to the bar, someone makes it up, someone brings it over. It's a different business model. It's a different way of starting the thinking of that business. And that doesn't mean a technical person started it, but you probably still need technical people in that business to understand the user interface. Is that QR code really going to work? What's the sign-up process once you're in? How clunky is it? How easy is it to do? So I think your question's right on, it's going to take a broad range of people to drive a digital and technical economy. Some will be the most advanced data scientists or machine learning experts you could possibly imagine, and some won't be, but they'll understand how technology can solve the problem. And I think that's played out in some of the biggest tech companies in the world. Not everyone is deeply technical, but they understand how technology can solve the problem. So I think the answer to the question is both. We need both. But there's a huge partnership here between doing it. And just to go back to one thing I said earlier, the Southwest is full of amazingly creative businesses, and I think we can produce really creative talent. I think creativity is a very strong strand within any tech community, is creativity.
I think one of the issues that we have, certainly in this part of the Southwest, so I would say Devon, Cornwall, and even Somerset, is aspirational. And this was something I was talking about on the weekend, and I wonder, what do we do to raise aspirations so that people from here are more confident, a wider range of people from here are more confident to start businesses and, also have the confidence to be okay when they don't succeed?
At the Skillshift event here at the Met Office, a question came up earlier that we still see lots of young people in education training for traditional jobs. So they may be doing training to be a mechanic or a hairdresser, or a job that they can see that's out there in the economy. It's very visible. They might know people who do it. They might have family friends who are in that profession. And we're talking about the thing, if you took the Southwest digital economy, there are no great office blocks full of front-end developers, where you can drive past the kids and say, hey, that building's full of front-end developers or full-stack developers. Like, it's just not how it works. So it's quite hard to show the role models to people. So that aspirational piece, they can identify and say, well, do you know what, I could do that. So I think this is incumbent on anyone who's listening. We have to storytell. We have to paint pictures. We have to provide more meetup experiences to show people what the career journey is, what the real work actually is, and where people can start. Because everyone who's listening started somewhere. Everyone's going to have a story, and some will have the most wonderful backgrounds and how they got there. Again, we have to make this accessible to people to understand how they get there and what they can do, because that's how you, your question about how, that's how do you inspire someone. So someone who's sat in Bridgewater now, either in education and needs a different direction, or they want a career change because they've realised they don't want to work non-stop on a contract job which doesn't earn enough money to support their family, but they know they can do something differently. We have to show them that something's possible and train. And I'll go back to democratisation. You'd expect this from me because I work for Microsoft, but Microsoft Learn or LinkedIn Learn as learning platforms have never been more available. I'll caveat that with, you do need internet access and you do need a PC or a Mac or some kind of internet connected device. I know that's a challenge for some families and some individuals. However, if you can get connected to decent internet connectivity with a good device, there's never been more free training available to start this journey. And when I mean free, I mean really free. The initial course is on what's machine learning. You can do that on LinkedIn Learning, you can do it on Microsoft Learn for free, and you can understand it. You might never go further than that first 20-minute piece of engagement, but you might. And I think, again, we have to promote this.
Actually, I know I said that was my final question, but I do have a thought because, you know, when you mentioned Microsoft Learn and LinkedIn Learning as well, I think it is actually incumbent on big businesses to create opportunities for people to learn for free. Because one of the things that I have found over, you know, working with smaller businesses is it's the cost, the cost of training, the cost of learning, and the cost of letting people, you know, a day, a week off to go and do that learning. All of that is it's not so bad for medium-sized businesses, but for smaller businesses it's a huge deal. So yeah, I think, you know, with these sorts of skills, it's actually quite important for bigger businesses to help out.
We were listening to some difficult stories earlier from the Federation of Small Business about they don't just have a tech talent shortage. They have a shortage of labour in some places that made that question really hard. How do I find time for learning or upskilling if I actually need my workforce on the front line delivering services that are going to earn revenue? That's a real challenge. But again, I'll go back to the fact, this democratisation of knowledge and learning. LinkedIn Learn doesn't have to be a day a week activity. It could be a couple of hours a month to begin to learn something. Same for Microsoft Learn. You may want to build up to a full accreditation that allows you to actually get entry into a great tech job. Depending on how much time you've got, that may take a year. It might take 3 months. You can really choose. But I think this ability to actually self-serve online. I was discussing earlier with someone, if you go back a few years to traditional technical training and IT training, you may have had to find a training center, find a course, book a hotel in the town you were traveling to. You may have been traveling to Bristol or London or Cardiff, book a hotel, do a 3-day training event, take the exam at the end in the room, pass or fail, travel home. That's all quite expensive.
The good old days,
that's quite expensive. And for some people it might sound brilliant, but actually can be quite depressive. Now, you could be in a full-time job, I don't know, make up a career, doing anything. You could be a firefighter, full-time job. But you might be interested in machine learning, algorithms. It could be any, you name it, you could be interested. Or you could be interested in a low-code, no-code platform. You can start at home at the weekends. You could start on YouTube if you wanted to, but you can very quickly get to a LinkedIn Learn course or a Microsoft Learn course. And then you can see the learning pathways all the way through. And I'm not saying that's going to work for everybody, but I think that will work for lots of people thinking, okay, where do I start and what do I do? And the range of learning is phenomenal, right through to the point you raised earlier about tech jobs that are not really technical jobs and creative jobs. There's even training there for people who are about to start their own business. Like, how do you start? How do you present your idea for initial funding? How do you run a presentation to a funding institution? That's all available. And I just think we need to make sure people know it's there and it's accessible, and that will really be a huge momentum boost for us.
Richard Ellis in Exeter, but all the way from Microsoft. Now let's hear from Steve Cox next up, and he told us why he wanted to host a Techstars event.
Success for this event is awareness. I've already had somebody who wants to be interviewed at lunchtime to start on Monday on Launchpad as a result of this event. So that for me is a perfect example. And I've had two other people that are here on this weekend said, could we actually come to the summer school?
That's amazing. That is successful already. So you've got what you wanted.
Yes, absolutely. It is a starting point, and that's why we will run many of these.
Everything else is a bonus.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely it is. And it's like, I think it's just amazing. Yeah, I'm really happy with what we've done, and I can't wait to organise an event in the future that I think will have real impact.
What do you mean, real impact?
In terms of the next one we're going to run, Cornwall has a unique geographic position for something with global impact, and the next event will be in that space.
Tell me more about Launchpad now and the new businesses that are coming out of it. I mean, some pretty awesome things have come out already. For example, I know about the agritech firm Glass Data. Mm-hmm. So they helped farmers to be much more ecological with their finances, with their resources, and they were way ahead of their time with what they invented, and all of that came from Launchpad, and they're working now with supermarkets and all these huge companies, and they're fantastic, and there's so many others as well, which I'm sure you can enlighten us on. What are the newest ones that you think are tipped for success?
Well, we have a very, very successful gaming business called Waving Bear, who's just raising an awful lot of funds.
Actually, I remember them. They've been here for like 2-3 years, yep. Right? And
They came as a preformed team. And they are really, I think what it is you have an early start as a business, but it takes quite a long time for that business to build momentum and have the credibility to raise funds. You know, what all the books say is you go through that theoretical process. You start a business, you have an idea, you get funding, you get accelerating, and it's just simple. It's not. There's Death Valley in every single startup. And it takes 3 to 5 years from, you know, incorporation of the idea to starting getting scale. And that's a really difficult time for these young businesses. And they're very vulnerable. And many people have to go and get a second job whilst trying to carry on, you know, with the idea. And, you know, 40-50% of them don't make it through that period. 70% of businesses never make a profit. So the reality is...
What, never ever?
Never ever make a profit.
Oh my God. That is bleak.
That is, but it's potentially bleak, but then it says, what is the environment, what does the culture need to be of reality, but also encouragement for those businesses that are coming out of Launchpad? So I think it's about targeting how you secure that first customer. It's really critical that you're not thinking about how you're going to be the next, you know, Microsoft or the next, you know, unicorn. It's about how you're going to secure your first customer, who's always the most difficult to secure, and then your second, then your third, and you build momentum one customer one day at a time.
Tell me more about Techstars then. What are your plans for this? Like, okay, yeah, you want people to know more about Launchpad, and you've already got that now. So what's going to happen over the next 2 days?
Well, we've got 7 teams working on that. There were 25 pitches of ideas from 31 participants, which is amazing. So there's people with ideas, which is this great start point. Then they had to vote on their ideas, and there's 7 projects being developed. Really exciting, you know, really diverse ideas. What is great is the intensity and the energy that you can feel in the building. And, you know, 8:30 this morning, people queuing up outdoors to get into the building to get going. It was partly breakfast, you know, because I arrived with the breakfast. But but it is also about short bursts of immense energy. Becoming an entrepreneur in Launchpad is a marathon, and it's probably an ultra marathon. So how do you pace yourself to spurts of enthusiasm? I think Techstars is a great starter to identify profile of people and their character, how they you see them under the worst pressure. You see them without the time to do stuff, but they still have to get through the process quickly. But I think it tells you a lot about somebody's resilience and somebody's attitude, that they can cope with all of that uncertainty, because you never have enough time to get all the data. You're always having to make decisions way before you've got enough information, because actually you can be a great employee to a business, but you just don't have that drive and that energy and that determination to do it for yourself. And the amount of people that say to me, I'm going to have my own business because I don't want to work for these corporates, because it's going to be easier to have my own business. I said, that's the most delusional view I've ever heard, because you're going to work 10 times as hard. And by the way, you're the last person that gets any money, because you pay everybody else and your suppliers first. And if there's any money left, you can get to keep some of it.
Or you could put it back in the business.
Or you plough it back in because you need to plough it back in. So you are not, you know, you earn your money if you keep the business going and it really succeeds when you sell it. That's the only time you really make any money. All right. So I think, you know, that reality check for some people means that actually they realise this isn't for them. So within a weekend, if half the people here are then absolutely determined to want to continue, great. But if half of them decide, actually, yeah, that was hard and I thought it was going to be, and they don't believe it when you say that's how it's going to be every day for 5 to 7 years. And, you know, the stresses, the strains, the pressure, the impact on your personal life, you've got to buy into this totally or not at all. And I just... And if that's an enabler for people to learn about themselves, that they're not ready for it or it's not for them, great.
Yeah. It's also about motivation as well when you have your own business, right? Because you have to motivate yourself.
Oh, yeah.
There's, you know, you're the boss. There's no one saying to you, get up in the morning at 6 a.m. Yeah. and get this stuff done. There's no one helping you along the way. You're just doing it for yourself. So I think that's another difficult thing when you have your own business and might be a bit of an eye-opener.
Yes, I think any leader, whether it be in a corporate world or as a startup, you are the motivator of your team and you have to be positive. And if you're negative, the culture of the business will be negative. So you are the barometer of the health of the business. You have to inspire yourself every morning to inspire your team.
That was head of Launchpad Steve Cox, who will also be on the podcast next month with top tips on how to get started on a successful business.
Now on to Roger Osorio from Techstars, who told Fiaza why he made the journey from New York, New York, all the way to Cornwall.
I was in Plymouth 2 months ago for a similar event, Startup Weekend, and I had connected with folks from that community, I think it was right before the pandemic, at a conference in Italy. And so I came out, obviously the word Plymouth makes sense to me, the word Mayflower makes sense to me. I would have never gone there on my own if it wasn't for the event. But obviously it's familiar, at least in terms of that. So let's go check it out. I went there and it was beautiful. I loved like just walking around the water by the harbor, you know, seeing all the boats, eating a meal, having coffee right by the water. It was just beautiful. And then I met Steve and Kerry, you know, who are obviously from here in Falmouth. They wanted to host their own event. And they told me, oh, we're farther west than Plymouth. I go, wait, I thought we were already southwest. And they're like, it gets even farther. I'm like, well, the pilgrims should have gone a little farther. Like, there I got to know this area a little bit more, and that helped me out. And when they told me about the event, I saw pictures, and I was just like, wow, I think it's even more beautiful, like, where they are.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I thought this would be cool if we could make it work. Plus, more importantly, it wasn't just how beautiful I thought it was in the pictures, but Kerry and Steve were really cool. You know, I love their mission, like, what they wanted to do with this event. And they wanted to go big, too, which I thought was really cool. This is my 57th Startup Weekend around the world. And so I've worked with a lot of organizing teams. And one of the things that really stood out for me with them was that they said, we want this to be a really special event. Like, this needs to be something spectacular. And that gets me excited. We got to work. I've been on calls with them for 2 months now. When you talk to people who are that passionate about bringing this kind of value to this area, I think it's exciting. And, you know, the other thing, but once upon a time, I spent time living in the Midwest of the United States. I grew up on the East Coast, but I spent 7 years in St. Louis. And for me, St. Louis was like, wow, this is a little town. Of course, compared to Manhattan, everything is a town. For me, that was rural living. Like, I'm out in the middle of the country, super different. And I saw that they struggled a lot with building a thriving kind of tech startup ecosystem, but they really wanted it. Well, they spent the better part of the next 10 years putting it all together. And, you know, they got their reward, and well deserved. In those 10 years, St. Louis became the number one city to launch a tech startup in the United States. They were just awarded that in 2021. And I thought, that is awesome. I'm super glad. Like, I was so happy for them because I spent 7 years there and I know there was potential. For me, this was kind of that same story. Here we are, not in London, way far away from London, a 5-hour train ride or a couple hours flight. And they're trying to build something special here. I see the ingredients for something special here. I see this just incredible, beautiful landscape. It's just absolutely gorgeous, inspiring for anybody who's creative. I see art everywhere. Like, I see things that are related to art, places. So there's some things that I feel like are part of the DNA here, that if the right people can create that energy and momentum, the ingredients are already there. It's just getting a recipe to whip it all together into something really awesome. And well, then you become your own version, not the Silicon Valley of the Southwest. You become the Cornwall, you know, like of the Southwest. You become what you are, and it's thriving on its own. It doesn't have to be like anybody else.
I think you're right. I think Cornwall has all the right ingredients. And I think one of the things about Cornwall is that everybody loves it. People remember it very nostalgically from when they came here when they were kids, and they remember the place that they used to have a lot of fun. And actually what's happened, it's moved away from that now. It is that beautiful place still, as you can see, but with the start of Launchpad and with Goon Hilly and Spaceport, it's become this very thriving hub. And I mean, there's so many little companies here that you would never believe. So people have seen the potential and the investment in Cornwall. People want to invest here. I think you're right. All we need is lots and lots more ideas, and for the people from here to see that that's possible. Because, well, it is possible. We've seen it. We just need to keep pushing that idea.
Yeah, actually, I would even argue, I think the ideas are here. I mean, I've had a few cab rides, and just talking to some of the drivers, they've shared their ideas with me. One even told me, I've never shared this idea before with anybody. Not even my wife knows this idea. But I just figured, well, what can I really do with it? Or maybe somebody will, you know, they'll nick it or whatever it might be. And I just thought, wow, the ideas are here. There's no shortage of ideas. It's that recipe. What's that recipe that we can build, that ecosystem, the resources to do something with those ideas and take them from concept to creation on a regular basis, knowing that the majority are going to fail? It's a numbers game. So if we can just create the conditions where ideas can be tested regularly, like normal, if you have one, there's a formula, you know where to go. Let me go give it a shot. Oh, that one didn't work out. Well, you know, we'll see if I get another idea. And you will. I mean, the truth is, once you start, you'll get other ones. And I think if you have that, then you always have, you've got a pipeline. You've got a pipeline of ideas that do make it. And then they're at different stages. And you, even when those companies maybe, let's say, move on, or maybe they just, you know, restructure or become something else, that's okay. No big deal. We've got somebody to take over that building because they're coming up and they're getting ready to need that kind of space. So we're ready to rock and roll. And of course, expansion too, beyond that one building. So I think that it's there.
This is, I think, where the problem lies here in Cornwall. And you can tell me, Cornwall has historically been a very poor county. And investment has only just started to come in because of places like Launchpad, because where, you know, there's Codices as well. I don't know if you've heard of them, but they work with Twitch and they make all these game shows and they're amazing. And there's loads of things that come out of Launchpad that are money making. But the problem that because Cornwall has historically been poor and because historically it's been forgotten, one of the forgotten counties, people here tend to be, they don't realize their potential. And they're also, maybe I'm going to get slagged off for saying this, but I think they might give up easier because they don't have the confidence. And the reason they don't have the confidence is they've always been forgotten. So how do we then change the mindset of people? Because, yeah, actually, people from outside are coming and making lots of money in Cornwall. Yeah. How do we let people in Cornwall make that money and change that mindset and give them that confidence to be able to do it? Because you just said a taxi driver told you a great idea. Well, he will not go and test it. So how do we get him to do that?
So I think that's a really great point you make about, you know, the challenge here is an identity, you know, because it was the forgotten county or the forgotten area, or, you know, maybe typically it was a poorer area, whatever it was. We inherit those identities and we take them on and we live up to them. And it's just a human thing to do. That happens all over the world. I mean, I grew up in an inner city. very easy for me to keep that identity of like, this is where I should stay, this is how it should be. It was incredibly uncomfortable to get out of that. But luckily I went to a university that was far enough away where I got to meet a lot of very different people and then come back to the area later or just go make my way anywhere. It didn't matter. Bottom line is I had a chance to get out of it, but it was an identity I had to break out of. So it's not even the mindset. I'll actually challenge that. It's the identity. And the question I think really is, how do we change that identity? How do we change that identity of this area? And I think it's already happening. When you think about younger people being born into this area, even if they are not well off today, the fact that they get to see different things, the fact that they see a different version of this area, if we can expose them to it at a younger age, they will not grow up with that same identity. In their mind, this is a very different place than it was for their parents. Good things take time. And you really got to do that, put in that work. But we need visionary leaders who have that kind of timeline, who can see the world 20, 30, 40, 50 years down the road. And then they could say, you know what, I want to plant some seeds now that are going to make a difference then. I would say, to answer your question, you want to begin changing that mindset and that identity, then work with the young, like really young people. Help them see stuff that normally they would never see. I recently was in Orlando, Florida, and I met with the founder of the Orlando Soccer Club, Orlando City Soccer Club. It's a professional major league soccer team in the United States. And she told me about, I went to visit her at the stadium where they have their offices right there. And they are in one of the poorest areas of Orlando. And I asked her, you know, about like, wow, how'd you get the stadium set up here and all these kinds of things and everything? And she said that, well, I kind of wanted it to be here. You know, because I thought, how do we as a soccer club coming in and, you know, Orlando's welcoming us, like they're bringing us in. And obviously Orlando is Orlando. There's Disney World theme parks, all of this stuff around. You could just set yourself up right by there. But she thought, how could we really become part of the fabric of this society? How can we really get to know the people who are from here? I think we just have to be closer to them. And by setting ourselves up here, even though it's obviously, you can see it, not the prettiest area or anything, but that's okay. She's like, there were a couple of food shelters and homeless shelters right across the street from the stadium. So they get to see all the action of the game and everything. One of the things that she shared with me that they do is that they bring in kids from these inner city schools into like the front offices to walk around, see all the action. And I asked her, wow, that's really cool. You know, what are you hoping to accomplish with that? And she said, most young people think that the only jobs in a professional sports club are those on the field or on the court. They don't know that it takes hundreds of people in the front office to get that product delivered on the field or on the court. And so what I want them to know is that if, you know, they are looking to get into sports, that's not the only way to get into sports. So I want them to be around us. I want them to come in and get to know the different people on our staff, because then they realize, wait, there's people who tweet about the games. There's people who are creating videos about it. There's people who are negotiating contracts, negotiating rights for television. Those are the things that growing up as a kid, especially in inner city, I only thought about the players. I didn't think about all the people in the office. And she's trying to address it that way. What she's trying to do is help these kids grow up with more possibilities. Just having planted that in their mind will make a massive difference in 10, 15 years when they're out there trying to figure out their way in the world. And they're like, I wonder if there's something going on here.
Roger Sawyer from Techstars is also the founder of the School of Reinvention, which is a training program that does what it says. And his book, The Journey to Reinvention, is out later this year. You can find out more if you look him up on Instagram.
That's all for today. Before we go, please do subscribe wherever you're listening. The more people subscribe, the easier it is for other people to find us. And if you want to talk about your tech business, just get in touch. As always, we'd love to hear from you.
And you can do that by tweeting at TechSWOfficial or find me, Fayaza Khan, on Twitter, LinkedIn or Instagram. Thanks for listening. Bye.
You're listening to the Southwest Tech Daily podcast with Robert Hillier and Fayaza Khan.